Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Welcome to a new episode of Measuring Success Right. I'm Cecily Henstrom, and I am thrilled to welcome our guest, Caitlin Connolly, today. Caitlin is an artist, writer, and creative enthusiast. Since graduating in 2009 from the University of Utah with a BFA in painting and drawing, she has passionately pursued and cultivated her creative path. Driven by a curiosity of femininity, her work explores the visual and conceptual contradiction of softness and strength in a variety of mediums and themes. Welcome, Caitlin. We're thankful that you can be talking with us today.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Cecily. Thanks for having me.
I'm a fan of your work. I saw a piece when I go to school at BYU, obviously, and I think it just circulated around on my Instagram with people that I followed, and so I've been a fan of your work for a little while, and when I told my mom that I was interviewing you, she freaked out, so that's awesome. Good name recognition.
Great. I love it.
I just want to start off by asking you a little bit about what your career path looked like. You're a little different than some of the guests that we have had on. Traditionally, we have a lot of business people in more corporate settings or nonprofit settings, but I want to hear about what your career path looked like as an artist. And from what I understand, you also run your art business yourself. So what did that look like a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thank you for having me. When I got the email to participate in this, I thought, I've done a few podcasts, but I've never done one like in a business setting. So that was kind of fun and new and exciting. So I would say for me, my pathway, it really started more as a passion that merged into a career. It took me a long time to decide to do art. I don't think, like, for example, in college, I tried a couple different majors, and I didn't think that art was paying money to study art just felt a little bit frivolous to me. I didn't think it sounded practical and things like that, but to be honest, I wasn't very good at the other things, so I went with art. I think that I followed art really more as a passion, but I had more of a business sense that has, I think, also served me. I think that comes from my upbringing and my parents. My dad was an entrepreneur, and he started his own business, and my mom is passionate about the arts. She loves music, and she plays the flute, and we grew up playing classical instruments, and were trained, me and my brothers. So I think that some of the benefit of that I was raised with helped shape the direction that I went and helped benefit me to enjoy art as a craft and as a creative pursuit, but also knowing how to approach it also as a business, I think was helpful.
That's awesome. In our careers, say that like I have a career. I'm starting my career. In careers, there's always going to be challenges and roadblocks to getting to where you want to be. And I just wanted to ask you what some of those roadblocks were for you, challenges maybe of trying to figure out how art is going to be. There's often a lot of critique about art being a sustainable career. And I was just wondering if you could speak to that a little bit, as well as any other challenges that you may have faced in establishing your career as an artist and writer.
Yeah, I think there's little micro challenges all along the way. And then I think there's a few challenges that stand out probably as being more significant. I think every path, you know, there's moments, it's like just the hike analogy, you know, there's moments of flat, beautiful scenery, smooth sailing, and then there's hiccups and hard spots. I think in the beginning, there was just little bumps, like even just deciding to do an art major. I thought, is this what I even want to do with my life? It wasn't really something I considered. And I remember towards graduation, one of my professors saying that there's something like 9 out of 10 art students don't do anything with their art after they graduate. Maybe they do still make a little art here and there for fun, but most of them don't ever, if they are going to be a working person, they don't work in the field of making artwork. And I remember when he said that, I felt like that inner wrath of thinking, well, that's not going to be me, you know? And at that point, I really hadn't even thought, I want to have a career as an artist. I don't think that's how I had approached it, but I did feel like, no, there's something here that I like. There's something important about it to me, and it's not something that I am going to be passive about. It's something that I want to pursue.
In the business field, internships and networking are so key to entering the industry. So what would you say are key things that students or young professionals should be doing to enter the industry of art or small business?
Sure. That's a good question. I would say art is definitely a field where there's not a really great manual, not really a great how-to manual. I think, and maybe that speaks to what you're talking about as well. It's like, where do I even begin? I think a lot of artists that are successful, I guess depending on how you are going to define that, right? Which is one of the things we're talking about today. I think finding some measure of success in their field, it probably means that they have to be somewhat entrepreneurial or creative with how they approach pursuing their art, because there's not really a path. And the market is always changing, and that's true for most of the arts. You know, it's reflective in the music industry and how do you buy music and share music and experience music. You know, it's really similar in art too. Do you work with galleries? Do you not? Do you, you know? In short, yes, and I don't think that there is a perfect answer to that, besides I would say working hard and getting creative and thinking outside of the box. I think usually in the art field, if you think, well, this person did it this way and they did X, Y, and Z, and so that's how it should be done, no matter what, it probably won't work for you or it won't work the same way. So, you know, look at people around you that are making even similar artwork to what it is that you aspire to make and see what worked for them, and then take a couple of different experiences and try to, you know, put them in the blender, mix them up and see, and start just trying things and say, does this work? Does this work? You know, and try different things.
So I want to ask you a little bit about the subject of your art. I wanted to just basically ask you, what inspires you to make the art that you make?
Currently, it's easy for me to say that the answer to that question. I know the answer to the question today that I didn't know years ago. So I think it started out just by a space of curiosity, of trying to be honest with myself and inquisitive and things like that. Fast forward, you know, probably 10 plus years of doing this, I would say that one of the things that fuels me the most is a desire for connection. That's kind of a theme that just keeps coming up for me. And for me, that feels like connection to myself, which requires a certain amount of honesty and vulnerability and curiosity. I would say a connection to God, feeling that sense of divine connection. And I would say also underneath that umbrella, there is a desire to maybe redeem or clarify the confusion about womanhood in divinity, and to find some healing and redemption in that. And then I would say another reason I love making art is, and like what art I like to make too, also is that desire to connect with other people. So when I was getting started was really kind of around the rise of blogging and Instagram and things like that. And there was this kind of surprise added benefit there where, you know, have this, it's like this live tweeting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never actually really got into Twitter, but this kind of live back and forth experience where you get to share this really vulnerable thing and then people can say, hey, I feel that way too. And so, you know, I've had just a really interesting experience throughout really the whole time I've been making art of having a very interactive dialogue with other people about what I'm making. And there's probably pros and cons to that. And I think it probably has definitely affected the art that I make. And overall, I would just say, like, it's been a really wonderful aspect of making art.
That's interesting, because we don't always think of communication in art. We think of, you know, here's a thing to observe. But it really is a form of communication. What does a day in the life of Caitlin look like? I know you're a mom, and that you have a studio. But I was just wondering, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, it's like, depends if it's a good day or a bad day. I feel like sometimes I'm a little hot and cold. So it's either a good day or a bad day. On a good day, I would say that I get to connect with my boys for a little while in the morning. I have a nanny that comes over. And in the afternoon, I would, be in my studio. And then I go back in to be with my family again. And then depending on the day and the season, I probably might come back out to my studio again later. And work a little bit more in the evening after my boys are asleep.
Nice. The work-life balance is something that so many people seem to be trying to solve and figure out lately. And I should mention, if you're listening to this not during the coronavirus, we are in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, which I know has changed a lot of people's lives, but working from your home studio, has that changed your circumstances very much?
It hasn't shifted it too dramatically. I did wonder, do people still want to buy art or care about art in a pandemic, or if the economy crashes, things like that. So those thoughts crossed my mind. It seems like people are very interested in artwork during crises, I guess, is what I've learned. My artwork often speaks towards a lot of emotional experiences within the human experience. And so I feel like, if anything, I feel like it was a little bit more connecting during a difficult time. I don't know if people buy as much art, but I would say the connection towards art was positive. We still have our nanny come. You're supposed to stay within limited groups of 10 people or less, right? And so she's within that circle for us. And so in that sense, I feel like I'm able to work and do the things I like to do, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, I'm glad your life hasn't been disrupted too much. And I think with the people connecting to your art more in this emotional time, that goes back to the communication aspect that you were talking about and the connectedness. Moving on to specifically talking about success, we've talked about it a little bit before, but I wanted to ask, A, do you consider yourself successful? And B, if you had to give a dictionary definition of success, what would that look like?
I love it. I would say I do consider myself successful. And I think it's important to come up with your own definition of what that means. I think, it's easy for like that, the pride of man to just say always more, never enough, more, more money, more success, more this, more that. So I'll answer your second question first. So if I say, what does it mean to me to be successful? I would say to be able to do something that brings you fulfillment, that is able to sustain itself financially and give you a little bit back to that you can use to benefit yourself and live off of, like if your business is, financing itself, and you're buying your groceries and not feeling like you're in debt, then I would say you're successful. And so in that sense, I can say, yeah, I feel successful.
With a small business, with an art business, I am ignorant. I don't even know how that works or how it starts. How have you set up a business around art?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think kind of similar to what I said at the beginning, it's like every, every artist, I think, just will approach it very differently. So there's no one prototype. There are books out there, you know, for being a successful artist, business person, you know, and I think if anything, artists are kind of like, what do? They taught me how to paint, but I don't know what to do about this whole business gig, you know? So I think it's different for everyone. I think, you know, in short, there you have money come in and then you have money go out, and you know, the way that those numbers vary, affect the business decisions you make. Some artists make more money off of their original sales. Some artists make more money off of selling prints. Some artists choose to do commission artwork, where somebody says, you know, will you paint this? And they do that. And a lot of times artists will charge a little bit of an increase for a commission. Some artists, you know, I'm just saying there's a variety of ways to do it. And then within that, you know, you have to set up, you know, like I have an LLC and I have some assistants that I pay, and, you know, there's your studio rent fee. So, I mean, bottom line, I guess I feel like it's all pretty basic. And for me, I've always just tried to, every time my business has grown, has mostly just become, has happened because it's been demanded of me. So if there's an increase of revenue, it's usually because I've hired more help. And then if I've hired more help, then I have more weird tax things to figure out. And so then I've hired somebody to help me with my taxes. And so it's, you know, and that, I don't know that that's the best way to do it, but as an artist, I kind of just focused on the art. And then as that has grown and become financially beneficial, then I say, now what do I do on my business side to accommodate that?
That's smart. And it makes me think of delegation. They always say you can't do everything yourself. And I mean, you said, you know, art is your specialty. That's what you're doing. That's what you're here for. So delegation I'm trying to do my taxes right now, and they're probably as simple as they're ever going to be in my life.
Taxes are, they haunt me. They're awful, but some people love them, which is great. So that's, and I agree. Delegation is important because we all have different skill sets. And, I would say I enjoyed delegating, somewhat early on, simply because I had all of these tasks and projects in mind where I thought I like to dream big. So I think I look at it and think, I want to do all of these things, but then I look at it and think, but I'm not going to be able to. So what do I need to do? What kind of help do I need to put in place to help me accomplish these things? Or do I just want to choose to let those things go? You know, do I pull back my scope of what I want to accomplish, or do I bring in more manpower? And different seasons have been different times for me. Sometimes I want more manpower and I just want to push through a lot of big things. And sometimes I say, you know what, I'm just going to kind of let go a little bit and just focus on a few small things. And after, because I have twin boys, they're my only children. They're just over 2.5. And after having my twins, delegation became even more of a necessity for me, because with my desires and my time allotment, I just realized, you know, my time was even more limited. And I wanted to be with my boys, and my ambitions didn't change, which was really unfortunate. Like, life would be a lot simpler if I had kids and then I was like, you know what, I'm not really into this art thing anymore. But I had kids and I didn't know what to expect. I really just went into having kids thinking like, oh, well, I don't know what this is going to be like. I guess we'll see. And, you know, they were only a couple weeks old when I was like, you know what, I really want to make more art. And now I feel like my ambitions have just gotten even and larger than they were before. So, you know, I just try to, there's a lot of things I am really not good at. And so I just try to make sure I'm focusing my energies on the things that I am like freaking awesome at, and then let everyone else help me with the rest, you know? So I make sure, like, when I interview a nanny, like, are you okay with doing dishes? Would you mind helping clean the toilet? You know, there's just things like that where I'm like, I basically have two priorities. I want to be with my family and I want to make art, and anything else that I can get out of the way, I will try to do that.
Our motto for our show is connecting the leaders of tomorrow, who are our listeners, to the issues of today. Do you feel like there are issues in the art industry or in small businesses or even in Utah that we, the rising generation, could work on resolving or examining?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, like I said earlier, things are always shifting, you know, and especially ever since the growth of the internet, the way that we interact with each other, and whether it's buying goods or consumer goods or just the exchange of ideas, is changing so rapidly. So I would just say, probably could say a few things, but I would say one thing would be to stay really curious with how you approach your career and get creative and think outside of the box. I think people often go into any kind of job with the expectation of, you know, and this is how it's done. And if I just do A, B, C, then I will get in return this thing. And it's just like, life is just funny right now. I feel like it's just this like shifting, morphing beast that's kind of that's kind of always changing. I think that sounds a little dooming, but if you're up for the ride, it's just like, you know, saddle on the back of that thing and see where it takes you. But so I would say that stay creative with how you're approaching your business. Another thing I would say is, you know, earlier you kind of mentioned with the connection, like sometimes it feels like, you know, the artist is over here and the consumers are over here and there's this big disconnect. I would say historically that was true, and I think that some unintentionally, I think some kind of pride emerged in that was like a good thing. I think on a really basic level, it was just like artists made artwork and you put up on the walls, and then people would come to a show and they'd meet the artist. There's like kind of this weird distance, but I don't think it was ever supposed to be some kind of emotional hierarchy of this distance. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yes. It's not the distance between the artist and the art that's important about the art. It's the art and the where it came from.
Exactly. And I think humans just love to throw pride in there. It's our own shame where we say like, oh, you did something I like. And then you say, oh, you are royalty. And it's like, don't touch the robes of the queen. It just, I don't know. People, we just love to like elevate ourselves. And we all do it so quickly, or, you know, movie stars or this or that, but we just create these weird distances and this disconnect where the truth is we're just all human beings. So I think in the art industry, you know, it's just one area of many areas that if we can figure out how to remove that barrier between basically somebody offering an experience and people experiencing that, and having a positive connecting experience and not letting it be super weird and letting it become a connecting experience, I think that's really powerful. I think there still is a lot of unnecessary pride in the art industry where it's like about, you know, what shows are you in, or are you in this magazine or this publication? And the flip side of that is that those are super important. It's how you build your resume. It's how you share your artwork. So nothing about that is really inherently wrong. However, sometimes I think it's easy to look at that, and again, back to that kind of like, you have to be creative about your business model and say, well, I have to be in this magazine and I have to do this thing and my CV has to look like this and da da da, or else dot dot dot, like what does that mean? You know, I won't be successful, or my art isn't good, or, you know, it's so, anyway, so I think as much as possible, pull those expectations out of there and like do that check on pride of like, is that even a real thing? Or is that just something that I think means that I am successful, or means that I am a good artist, or means that I am? Remove those and then just say, you know what? Because if really every artist can get to the core and say, you know what? I just love making art, because you find your own motives and then you stick with that passion and you keep making artwork in that passion of your being. And yes, add some business in there too, make some smart decisions, you know, and I think good things can happen. Yeah.
I think that the pride thing might come from like I'm not an artist, but I'm speaking from the viewer's perspective. It can come from a place of gratitude and thankfulness for someone creating art that you connect with, that I think it leads to often people othering artists or celebrities or whomever is in created the work that they admire. And I think that we can definitely re-examine, we can have that thankfulness and that gratitude. And instead of seeing that they created something that you believe you couldn't create or express, instead think about why something that you didn't think you could create or express still connects with you.
I love that. And I love how you said othering. Did you just make that up? That's funny.
No, I have a lot of classes where they talk about social hierarchies and things like that. So they talk about how we treat others different when we quote unquote other them. We make them not like ourselves.
Okay.
Psychologically.
So problematic.
Yeah. And it creates that divide that we should learn to break down and understand each other more. With the technology that's coming forth, with just instant gratification and instant communication, which is great because we have access to so much information still, it's creating, I was thinking, sorry, this is a small tangent, but I was telling my mom how, you know, it used to be you just showed up at someone's house and now you have to call them to show up at their house. And now you almost have to text to call someone, because I was going to call someone during quarantine. But
you say that, I feel like, you know, with the increase of availability of each other, like I feel like there's also an increase of talk about boundaries, right? People talk about boundaries a lot and things like that. And I feel like maybe that's the, you know, the yin and the yang to the experience, where it's like, how wonderful now that we're all so much more available to each other. And then also people are like, whoa, you're really available.
Too available sometimes.
That's oversharing.
Yeah.
Or whoa, tell me less, you know? But yeah, I think that othering thing is really problematic. And I think I've thought about it more as like a ranking or a pride, but I like that word that you said. I think that's really nice. And I think that exists in every person, in every arena and things like that. And I think when that shows up in any kind of field, I think it can limit the amount of influence and connection. And I think to artwork specifically, I think that for me, I feel like it's like the artist's obligation to put themselves onto the canvas and show and say to the world around them, you know, this is how I see it. Or look at it this way, see it through my eyes, things like that. And I think in that space, having any kind of like othering experience could be really damaging and really disconnecting, because we all need to be able to say, and I see it this way, and I see it this way, and can you look at it my way and look at it from this direction? And as we do that, I think that we all become a more like loving and generous and connected people. And if an artist is putting themselves on a canvas and saying, hey, look at it this way, and then everyone says, wow, you're right, however that happens, that could be really problematic and or limit other people's creative experiences as well, I think, in any kind of field or in any kind of direction.
I totally agree. You mentioned earlier that there's not really like a book about how to start a business for art, but do you have any podcast or book recommendations? We always try to, if you have any, to spread the word about to our guests, and we try to do that.
Oh, I have so many.
Yeah? Okay. tell me a couple.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think I would first say, too, that I think being successful in business, it really has to come from a place of authentic self. So I think my most helpful books have been to explore self. And I think I have the advantage of watching my dad make a business, because in a sense, I don't feel like I had to read as many business books. It was something that I more, you know, we all have a couple tools. I like to think of the toolbox analogy. We're always adding more tools to our toolbox. Mm-hmm. And some of the business tools, I don't think I even realized, but I think I had a couple of them in my toolbox. I didn't even know. And I have so much to learn. Don't get me wrong. But the areas where my business was weak that I needed to strengthen and build up were more of myself. So some of the things that have been the most helpful for me, I first have to say Brené Brown. I love Brené Brown so much. I like to call them the Gospels of Brené. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's released a lot of different things, but I think specifically the four books, and reading them in the order that they came out. So The Gifts of Imperfection, Daring Greatly, Rising Strong, Braving the Wilderness. I think those are so important to humanity. And Dare to Lead is also great. I don't include it in the Gospels of Brené because I feel like there is some repetitive language to it. And it's more focused on actually business leaders. So there you go. That's great. But yeah, I love Brené Brown. I would also say Essentialism by Greg McKeown. I love that book. And he talks about priorities. And I say that laughing because he talks about how the word used to always be priority. And at some point it shifted. You'll have to read his book to understand, to priorities.
Yeah.
Like we can have multiple.
That's kind of profound.
It's like actually the whole point of the word was that you can only have one.
Yeah.
So, and that book talking about trade-offs and priorities and just kind of where you're putting your focus, it really helped me with what to expect out of myself and what to focus on. I really liked that one. I love the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Kind of talks about tapping into your creative person. Really great. I also really love The Artist's Way. It's called, full title is The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity. And it's a 12-week course, essentially, for creativity, and life-changing. I love it. And I'll also throw out their Bossy Pants by Tina Fey.
I read part of it.
Oh, man. I'm a big Tina Fey fan. I'm a big 30 Rock fan. And I think that she's wise and generous and also funny. So it's kind of just like a win-win-win all across the board. I also like the book Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon. It reads almost a little bit more like a picture book, which is really fun. And it talks about how to be influenced by multiple people and avenues, but trying to find your own voice in that. And I think that's really nice. And I'll also throw out there, I could list like 20 more, but I'll throw out there two more. One, I don't think anyone's going to listen to this, but do if you want to. And also, by the way, I almost always listen to my books on Audible. So, okay, this one's called The Music Lesson by Victor Wooten. If there's any music fans out there, you probably know him as the bass player for Bella Fleck and the Flecktones and things like that. His book is super wacky and I'm way into it. So I definitely recommend the audiobook version of it because it has all these wicked bass lines in there and it's just a wild ride. Like, anyway, like if you don't want to do drugs but feel like maybe you do drugs, like listen to that book.
Noted.
And then, and it just kind of talks about, I guess, also creativity and following your journey is just interesting. Anyway, the last book I'll mention, just to bring us all together, is Harold and the Purple Crayon by Crockett Johnson. I know, right? Because I feel like this book talks about, and for those of you that don't know, you know, it's a book for one to, well, apparently, I mean, I'm 34, so apparently 1 to 34-year-olds.
Traditionally a children's book, but enjoyed by all.
Harold and the Purple Crayon, I think, talks about innovating, getting yourself out of, like, problem solving, getting yourself out of tricky situations, and in being an inventor and having fun doing it. So those are my recommendations for books.
Those are good recommendations. You've mentioned your dad's entrepreneurship a couple times. I'm just curious, what kind of business did your dad have or has?
Yeah, sure. He offers benefits to often, he works with like third party, like associations to offer benefits to their companies, their workers, things like that. And offered some of those benefits, like partnered through with Science Bank and stuff like that. So growing up, I don't think I really understood what he did, but I'll tell you what I loved about my dad's business is that I got to go to his warehouse and help package things. And so we'd put together, at first it was, he really focused on like vacation benefits like golf and hotel and things like that. So we put together these little packages where you'd put these little credit card, mock credit cards in there with like pamphlets about golf resorts and hotels and stuff, and put them together. And then you got to put it through the Saran wrap machine and the heat machine. And then you package them and put them in boxes and they, you know, send them off to people. And I loved working in his warehouse. I thought it was so fun. And when I was doing my own artwork, I remember the day that I got one of those like plastic sealers where you got to seal it down. And then I, you know, kind of trimmed off the excess. I felt like I had arrived in the world.
Like, I am my dad now.
Like, I just remember growing up and being like, this is how like a successful business is run. I thought it was so inspiring and so fun. And I got my plastic sealer and I was just like, well, this is as good as it gets. You know, by the way, a plastic sealer is like $40 on Amazon. So
I can be successful tomorrow. You know,
I could have reached that milestone way sooner than I expected, but it was really fun.
That is fun. You were just joking, that was like the end, that was the goal. But I am curious, like, what were your hopes when you started to, you know, produce and sell art, and what are your hopes for the future?
No, I'm just laughing because I don't know if I ever had a really clear plan besides the fact, I'm just thinking of that line in, Say Anything. Do you know that movie with John Cusack?
Yeah, but I watched it when I had my wisdom teeth out, so I don't actually remember anything about it.
But you thought it was really funny, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, that's the one where he holds the boombox up over his head and stuff. Anyway, there's this really funny scene in there where he's like, I don't want to make anything sold, bought, or good. I don't want to sell anything made, bought, sold. I don't want to, anyway. Point is I think on some level, I do think I actually was really interested in selling things. I kind of interesting I see now, but remember when I was in college, I went to this jewelry store and I saw all these beads and these clasps and everything. And I thought, I kind of did the math in my head where I thought, okay, if I, you know, bought all these beads and these chains and stuff, but then if I sold them for this much, then I'd have this kind of increase and, you know, just basically trying to pay your bills kind of thing. And the end of that story is I think I spent like $150 like on beads, which at that time I did not even have that kind of money. So I remember like leaving the store with like a pit in my stomach, but also like so excited. Like, this was a really bad idea. This was the best idea ever. This was a really bad idea. This was the best idea ever, you know? And nobody bought any of my necklaces.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. You know, I think in hindsight, I was like, those aren't very good. And I think I probably was, I don't know. I think I went like, I knocked on a few doors like in the college dormitories and was like, do you want any of these necklaces? And you were like, no.
Like, please have sympathy. And they're like, you don't have any money either.
And so anyway, I think I liked making things with my hands. I've always been good at, I'm not like a great test taker, but I'm good at making things and building things. I like construction. I just like building and making and creating. It's really fun for me. And I feel like I also have a desire to sell those things and be able to pay bills, you know? So I think probably my starting goal was something along those lines. Not a lot of awareness to it, but simply that. I think now my goals are more, a little bit more known and more mature. And now I have just a couple of different goals. Mostly, I would say most of my goals start as a creative goal. And then I support it with some known financial goal, or at least financial understanding. I guess what I mean by that is, like, for example, like, I started to dive into sculpture and I love doing it. It's so fun. And the cost of making sculptures is pretty significant. There's a lot of overhead. Mm-hmm. And so I think of my sculptures as kind of just a break-even kind of experience. And that's totally still worth it for me. It's really fun. You know, depending, there can be a little overhead, but it's not, it's anyway. So point is sometimes I say, you know, this, like, there's that term like cash cow, right? Like, what's your cash cow? Like, I think it's nice to be aware of items that can be a cash cow for you that can allow you to be more creative, is one approach that I've taken. So I might look at a couple different projects and say, you know what, this one is really important to me and I don't think there's any income in coming out of that. And that's great. That's fine. Also, if I do need to pay my bills, then what is it that I'm choosing to do to support these other creative ventures? I feel like I have tried creative ventures where I've been like, oh, you know what? If I just do this, then I'll get this much money. That's awesome. And I feel like almost every time it totally like falls on its face. And it's just funny. So I think it's the cart and the horse analogy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the horse is the creativity, the honesty, the inspiration. I think the cart is the money. And I think if you put the money before it, things get really weird. But when I trust in, you know, digging deep, getting creative, trying new things, following projects that feel important to me, I think usually the horse will draw the cart. And I think the hardest thing about that is it does require a lot of faith. Because when your gut just says, you know what, I just really think I should just, you know, throw some paint on the floor and lay in it. And I've never actually done that. But, you know, when you have these ideas.
Abstract now.
Yeah, exactly. But when you have these ideas where you're like, that just honestly sounds kind of like a dumb idea. But when you're, my husband and I call it buzzing. When you're feeling buzzy about an idea and you're like, I just got to see this through. You just got to see it through. And you got to have faith that somehow along your journey, it will all work out. Even if it doesn't, not everything's going to be a win. Most, you're going to have a majority of things that feel like a fail. And somehow along the road, you keep working, you keep trying, and good things will happen.
Do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to share?
Oh my gosh, I forgot one of my favorite books, The Moment of Lift by Melinda Gates.
Oh, I've been reading a lot about her lately, actually.
Man, that book is important. Mm-hmm. That is an important book. The Moment of Lift, about a lot of my art focuses on womanhood, and The Moment of Lift has a really responsible and thorough and curious way about looking at women in today's society, the things that are important for us to be talking about. Wow, it is meaningful. Love that book.
Thank you for listening, and thank you to Caitlin again for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts so you'll never miss an episode. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at Marriott Student Review. This is Cecily Henstrom with Measuring Success Right. Have a wonderful week.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review, or online at marriottstudentreview.org.